to the January 10th, 2013 meeting of the Planning Commission, first meeting of the year. Happy New Year. And Ramona, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Murphy?
Here.
Commissioner Campbell?
Here.
Commissioner Topping?
Here.
Commissioner Irving?
Present. Please stand for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. This is the portion of the meeting that is for public comment for items not on today's agenda. I have not received any speaker slips for any items not on the agenda, so I will close public comment, bring it back to the board, and it is time now in my role as vice chair for last year to call for election of the chairperson and vice chair, and so the floor is open for nominations. Commissioner Christensen.
I go ahead and nominate you as chairperson for 2013.
Second.
Thank you.
You had a call for discussion.
I'm out of here. Goodbye. Is that a roll call vote then for election?
Yes.
Would you call the roll?
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes. Thank you. And now I'll open the floor for nominations for vice chair for 2013. Commissioner Christensen.
Well, congratulations, and I nominate Commissioner Murphy as vice chair for 2013.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion on that one, Mr. Murphy? Ramona, would you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Aye.
Chairman Irving.
Yes, thank you. Time for planning staff updates. Ms. Griffin.
Well, Happy New Year to the commission. Welcome to your first meeting of 2013. I'd like to start out by welcoming our brand new commissioner, Mr. Campbell, from the 5th District. Welcome to the commission. Luckily, you have a pretty interesting agenda, your first agenda that isn't a sewer or some other giant project like some of our other commissioners were given on their first days. But welcome very much.
Ease me into it.
That's right. I'd also like to start out by introducing some folks to Mr. Campbell, just to make sure that you kind of have faces and names to go with the faces to go with the names. And the first is to introduce Ramona Hedges. She's your Planning Commission Secretary and your contact. This is Ellen Carroll, sitting next to me. She's the Environmental Coordinator. She is the person in charge of the Planning Division. So you will see her sitting with you a number of times throughout the year. I'm Cami Griffin. I'm your Assistant Director with the Department of Planning and Building. Out in the audience, we have Jason Giffen. He's the Director of the Department. You'll see Jason and I here from time to time on certain agenda items. In the front row and slightly behind, Steve McMasters is a brand new supervising planner with our Planning Division. Nancy Orton is our brand new Division Manager with the Planning Division. So she is replacing Mr. Hoag, and you will probably see her most of all at your meetings. And then behind Nancy is Bill Robeson. He is a brand new supervising planner with the Planning Division. So this is your team. Always feel free to contact us with any questions that you might have, and we'll try and answer them as best we can. Looking ahead at your agendas, you do have a couple of items on the January 24th agenda, and Mr. Irving will be absent that day. So, Mr. Murphy, you get your first vice chairmanship. You get to run the meeting. And both of those items are neither of those items. Oh, do you have a conflict on one of them?
possibly have a conflict. I received a notice card. I have property adjoining the subject property of one of the hearings, so you may be down to three on that one.
That's okay, because it's still a quorum. Would we have to figure out who would chair that meeting, Ms. McDonald?
Yes, I believe if Commissioner Murphy has a conflict, then he would need to abstain from that action. So we would need to find somebody else to volunteer to head that meeting, I believe.
I believe a previous chair should serve in that role.
That's who I was going to volunteer.
Yeah, I think we've volunteered Commissioner Christensen to.
So. Yeah, that'd be no problem, obviously.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got that worked out. I forgot to introduce Whitney McDonald, who is county counsel and will be sitting in that chair most of the time, although from time to time you'll see different faces over there. Mr. Jim Morton, or maybe even rarely we'll see Tim McNulty. So.
And Mr. Marshall.
And Glenn Marshall, who is your representative from Public Works. So the only other agenda issues is that so far on February 14th, we don't show any items on the agenda, but we're still within a noticing period, so we don't quite want to cancel that meeting, but just to give you a heads up that meeting might end up being canceled. You do show items on your February 28th meeting, though. So that's all that I have, unless I can answer any questions.
Any questions of staff? Thank you very much, Ms. Griffin. It's time for reviewing the consent agenda. Any member of the public or commission wish to pull any item, speak on the item? Consent agenda being our minutes from the December 13th, 2012 meeting. Could I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Yes.
Second.
All those, is that a roll call vote also? No.
I don't think it needs to be,
okay,
but just to make it clear for the record that because Commissioner Campbell was not present at that meeting, he would not be voting on the consent agenda.
Thank you, then. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes. Ramona, would you introduce hearing item number one, please?
Hearing to consider a request by Lime Mountain Company and T-Mobile for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2011-00079. Supervisorial District Number 1, Cody Shield, Project Manager.
Good morning, Chairman.
Good morning.
Members of the Commission. So we're here today to consider a request by Lime Mountain Company and T-Mobile for a conditional use permit number DRC 2011-00079. This permit is to allow for the construction and operation of an unmanned wireless communication facility consisting of a 61-foot tall faux pine tree or monopine. The facility would consist of 12 panel antennas and three sectors of four antennas each, mounted to the top of the monopine at a height of 53 feet above grade. 1 6-foot diameter microwave dish mounted at a height of 20 feet above grade, and six equipment cabinets within an approximately 900 square foot equipment enclosure. There's about approximately 550 feet of associated aerial utility routing. The project will result in approximately 900 square feet of disturbance of an approximately 618-acre parcel. Okay, the project is located at 16624 Chimney Rock Road, approximately 20 miles southwest of the Heritage Ranch Village Reserve at the end of Chimney Rock Road. The proposed project is in the agricultural land use category and is located in the rural Adelaida planning area. Here we have an aerial photo of the proposed project, and in the red is the outline of the existing parcel. And this is the same photo but zoomed in, And we can see that the proposed monopine would be located or backdropped in this little ring of trees right here. Here's an overall site plan of the project. Again, the parcel boundaries. And this is the enlarged site plan. And here's where the proposed project's going to go. And this was the little ring of trees right here. Here we have the equipment and antenna plan. These are the three sectors of four antennas. And these are the equipment boxes located in the 900 square foot lease equipment area. Here we have the north and south elevation of the proposed monopine. And the east and west elevation. And here's just an estimated photo of the proposed lease area. This is looking south. All right, now we have some photo simulations. This is view one. View one, you can see, is located here, so we're looking northwest at the site. And here's the existing photo as is without the monopine. And then here's a photo simulation showing the monopine right here. And then we have another view, view two, if you will. We're looking just southeast at the site with this view. Here's the existing photo, and then a photo simulation of the proposed monopine. Down here's the fence lease equipment area. There is only one public viewing area I could find of the site, and I could barely see it from this photo, and I would think it would take some sort of magnification tool to actually see a silhouette of this monopine. You can see there's just a bunch of hills backdropping it. I have another photo here that zoomed in, and you can barely make out some of the white mining operation there. So this is the only public viewing area, and this is from the intersection of Nacimiento Lake Road and Heritage Loop Road. Before concluding, I would like to make a change to a condition in the staff report. This change would be on page 1-9. And it would be condition number 1A. And so that reads, installation of 12 81-inch panel antennas in three sectors of four antennas mounted at a height of 53 feet above grade. That's incorrect. That should actually read 56 feet above grade, measured to the top of antennas. And that's depicted on the plans as well. So I'd like to make that change in the staff report from 53 feet to 56 feet. Okay, and with that, staff is recommending the adoption of the negative declaration in accordance with CEQA and the approval of conditional use permit DRC 2011-00079. Based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Cody. Does the commission have any questions of staff at this point? Would the applicant like, is the applicant here? Would you like to address the commission? And have you filled out a speaker slip, sir?
I have.
Great.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. My name is Jesse Gilholm. I work for a company called Synergy Development Services. We're contracted by T-Mobile to help with the development of their wireless cell sites. Here today representing T-Mobile. I'd like to start out by thanking staff, and I've actually had the opportunity to work on a number of projects in the San Luis Obispo County jurisdiction over the years, and this project, as well as my previous experiences. Staff is incredibly knowledgeable and good to work with from the beginning stages of a project all the way through design. So I want to commend them and give my thanks for that. On this particular project, thank Cody for the presentation. Long story short, it'll be a new facility. It'll be a fake pine tree, a monopine, located up on the ridge overlooking Lake Nacimiento, without any neighbors that can view the facility in any proximity. In fact, the only vantage where it's really visible from any public viewing area, it's so far away it'd be virtually undiscernible, at least with my eyes. And here to answer any questions that that the commission may have, and have an opportunity to speak to any issues that anyone from the public may have as well. I'll leave it at that for now.
Thank you. Ramona, my monitor is not working, but Ken, did I see you push a button? You have a question? Ah. Thank you, Madam Ex-Chair. He did not. I was not privy to the secrets of how to work the button. Ooh, okay. Mr. Topping.
Yeah, I just wanted to congratulate the applicant for using the word fake, not faux. It's refreshing, such straight talk. I'd encourage it in the future staff reports, perhaps, or at least artificial. How's that? I did have one question, that is, are there any trees that are going to be removed? None?
No, the current equipment area that will be disturbed is currently disturbed, and we will not impact any trees.
Thank you. Great, thank you. Commissioner Christensen.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, I was just wondering why the property owner didn't want the property owner.
Mike, please.
Your mic.
Sorry, wrong light. So worried about your thing. Okay, so why the property owner wouldn't agree to co-locate on the other already built area?
I believe it was due to the proximity to a road and their future utilization of the land and the mine there.
All right.
And they're the, yeah, that's
okay.
Short answer.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Bring it back to the, well, actually, are there any, is there any public comment on this? I've received no speakers slips. So close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Do we, anybody else have any questions on this item of staff? No. Well, I'm, you know, since it's in my district, I thought I'd go last, actually.
Yeah.
So I have Carl, Commissioner Christensen.
Yeah, I just had one other question for staff, and that was about the aerial routing electrical lines from the existing connection point to the proposed equipment area. Aren't those usually supposed to be undergrounded? I can understand why they're not being undergrounded this time. I just didn't know if our ordinance requires it or.
In my experience, they are, yes, usually underground, but they have existing power poles there that have the utility routing already in place, and so they're just going to pull it over from the existing cell site.
Okay.
And it's not required by our ordinance as well.
Okay.
Thanks.
I mean, we usually do see them underground, but not this time, and I can understand why if they're 8 miles away from the nearest viewpoint and you already have lines. Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Murphy.
Yeah, I had the same question on undergrounding. We are doing 550 feet of trenching, isn't that correct? There's not actually.
They're not undergrounded. They're aerial.
It talks about 550.
It talks about 550 feet of aerial routing. That's new aerial routing, isn't it, as part of the project, not existing lines?
That's correct.
But I'm not concerned about undergrounding it being on the user's site, but it is new.
Oh, it's new
above ground
there.
Lines. And then I was wondering on, we have multiple cell site projects a day, so I ended up comparing your conditions of approval, so forgive me for doing that, but I'm just curious, we have a finding regarding co-location in one of the three projects, and I didn't know if that finding is something that we want to commonly include in cell site conditions, or as to why it only showed up in one of the projects. Is there a specific reason for that? It's finding G, I think, in project number 2. Had a finding regarding that it met the requirements for co-location or was unable to co-locate for qualified reasons. So I'm just kind of bringing.
Maybe I could jump in there. This is Whitney McDonald from County Council. I noticed the same thing, and I double-checked our ordinance, and we're not required to make a finding about co-location. I think it just, you know, is added because it is something that the ordinance discusses. So that's why you'll probably find with the next item, I'm not suggesting that we have to add that finding to the other projects.
So this is more artistic style between various planners, possibly?
That could be, although I think that it's same planner. And anyway, I just don't think it's a problem here.
Okay.
Aaron Linsingwall, planning staff. I can add on to that as well. This first project, while it's not co-located in the sense of installing antennas on an existing monopole, it is cohabitated at an existing telecommunications site. So it's different than the other project, which is a completely new site, in which case there would be more of a need to explain why the applicant didn't co-locate somewhere where facilities already exist in the findings.
Okay. And then I couldn't find mitigation measure VR2 in the COAs. Is it in there, or did I miss it, or does it not need to be in there necessarily?
Yes. Thank you for that. You are correct that mitigation measure was not included in the conditions of approval, so we are proposing to add that as a new condition, number 5. And that's a requirement for a post-construction bond to ensure that the facility is constructed in accordance with the approved mitigation measures as far as visual resources are concerned.
So
whereabouts are you going to?
Where would you put that?
I have a question regarding where you're going to locate it to.
It would be under. It would be a new condition number 5. So that is under the visual resources heading.
Okay. So that brings me to another question that comes up in another project. You're requiring this at application, not a construction permit. And it seems like if they're going to have to actually go to the cost of acquiring a bond, that requirement should be an issuance of permit, not an application. If the application were disapproved for some reason or the project didn't go forward, it seems like the applicant shouldn't have to spend the money to purchase the bond that he may not otherwise need.
Yeah, we could add it after.
So I think it should be an issuance as opposed to an application.
So we would number that new condition number 7 then.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Bump so you're going to add you add the bond at condition number 7,
yeah,
or the condition compliance issue of the bond?
Well, it would be under a new heading, visual resources, condition 7. And then
that'll probably be bonding and be number 7, and then condition of compliance will slip down below that.
Okay.
and pick up with 8. And then the other comment I noticed in, I think it was number 3, and I've seen this in other staff reports, the mitigation measures, when they're put it into conditions of approval, you identify them by their letter and numeral ID number, like VR 2 and 3. And I think if we can make that a common practice, it would be a lot more helpful, because I end up going to the mitigation, and I'm trying to find them in the COAs. And the ones where they're already numbered is great. Where they're not, it's like, is it in there or not? So I'd like to see that as a common practice in our staff reports, that when the mitigation measures are incorporated in the COAs, that numeral and digit letter and numeral number is incorporated in there also, so it's easier to follow. And that's it.
That's it for you. Anyone else? I do have a couple of questions. Commissioner Christensen hit part of mine, which had to do with the co-location, and I think, Arlen, you answered it as cohabitation. This may be more a general question on these sites. When you are having an applicant come to you to build a facility, obviously in the staff report it says the wooden pole. So the requirement for co-location to have been addressed is really more of a wish than when an applicant comes in, they have to demonstrate to you that they can't co-locate on an existing pole or building or windmill or what have you.
Correct.
So if the previous or the original builder of that didn't build one sufficiently strong or limited its size, then it's really just kind of an exercise that you go through. Or do you, I mean, do you find opportunities to co-locate.
Erland Singwald, planning staff. Almost every new tower that we process does have capacity for additional co-location, especially any monopine. And that's something that we definitely encourage. Another reason why that happens is it makes a lot more financial sense for the carrier, because then they are able to in turn lease space to another carrier, which helps cover the cost of constructing the facility in the first place. And the commission saw on the last cell site project over by Home Depot, where we actually did allow for a taller tower so that it would increase the co-location capacity of that Great. Tower. So that is something that we are...
You do look at that.
You do
Good.
Look at that, yes.
Because I go to anticipate that a third provider will be coming to ask T-Mobile here to let them establish, because they'll be out of competition there. I just had one question regarding biological resources and on 1-11. Are there any known nests on I'm sure on the property, on the parcel of some 600 acres or actually it's much larger than that, the total ownership. But when you're looking at the nesting areas, this is in a heavy industrial site. Are there any known sites? How far away from the tower itself are they going to be required to look for activeness?
Erland Singwald, planning staff. It would just be within the immediate area of disturbance. There aren't any known nests. That's just a standard requirement due to the Migratory Bird Treaty
Sure.
Act that we add to these projects.
So it's just within that known area. It's not on the parcel per se.
Correct. Yeah, it's in the larger region.
Mm-hmm. And that's all the questions I had. So, Ken, go ahead.
Yeah, just I noticed that condition 14 talks about protective fencing around all existing trees. Is there anything in the conditions? I haven't spotted it. If there is, that basically puts a restriction on tree removal.
We did not put any of the a condition like that in here. We just based that on the project description. They're not planning to remove any trees.
So it's part of the project description. Is that the way to?
Well, I suppose in the broad project description, I believe Jesse said that they weren't planning to remove any trees.
Right.
I would be happy to add a condition that says no tree removal. Allowed.
Any objection?
You feel strongly
that?
About that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, just because.
Just to be careful?
Yeah.
All right. Without objection from the commission? If you would add a condition then requiring that the no trees be removed. Cody?
Yes. We can add a condition, a new condition number 12 under biological resources. Or maybe we should move that.
You're going to get.
I'm just looking for an appropriate place to put
that. Actually, you could probably just put it at the end of condition, existing condition 14. Just add on no
sure.
trees shall be removed.
Yeah.
That probably works.
Okay.
That works for me. Commissioner Murphy.
Yeah, I missed one item on my list, and it's kind of come up before in another project. On item COA 7, and actually 8, it talks about a condition compliance coordinator, and then later on it brings up a mitigation condition coordinator. Actually, I think it only brings up the initials MCC. And I've seen this go back and forth between the two descriptions previously, and I'd asked about it. If we couldn't, is it necessary to have both, or could we just use CCC in all projects, or is there going to sometimes be both? But in this case, it's referred to in number 8 as the condition compliance coordinator. Okay.
Thank you. Commissioner Campbell.
Back to the tree removal sentence you're going to put in. I just wanted to clarify that I presume that is for the existing construction, immediate construction area.
That is correct.
I would be concerned if it fell over into his entire holdings.
Yeah. No, that will be with the ring of trees in the immediate vicinity.
Great.
Well, that was kind of my thought on if there's a tree there he can remove anyway, can he not remove that tree as not part of the project? Shouldn't the tree issue really go back to whatever our regulations are regarding moving trees in general and not have to do with this specific project? Or is that incorrect from an environmental CEQA standpoint if you're going to remove a lot of trees that are legally removed, that has to be considered as part of the CEQA process?
Yes.
If they're legally removed, yes.
Yes.
Yes, we got an answer. Thank you.
Mr. Campbell, or no?
No,
oh, okay,
just
good.
It off. Sorry about
great.
That.
So, does the commission have any other questions for staff? Then, as it's in my district, I will make the motion then that we adopt the mitigated negative declaration, ED11-144, in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA. Resource Code 2100 exsequence and approve the conditional use permit DRC 2011-00079 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as modified today.
Second.
We have a second. And could we have a roll call?
Chairman Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes. And we will move to item number two on the agenda. Ramona?
Hearing to consider a request by the Pacific Telephone and Telegraph Company and T-Mobile for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2012-00002. Supervisorial District Number 5. Cody Shield, Project Manager.
Thank you. Cody.
Hello again. Cody Shield, Department of Planning and Building. We're here to consider a request by Pacific Telephone and Telegraph Company and T-Mobile for a conditional use permit. Permit number DRC 2012-00002. This permit is to allow for the construction and operation of a wireless communication facility consisting of a 50-foot high fake windmill.
Thank you. Thank you.
The facility would consist of six panel antennas located inside a radio frequency transparent radome. That would be mounted to the top of the 50-foot high windmill. Four equipment cabinets are associated with the project, and they're located within a 400-square-foot fenced equipment enclosure. And there will be about 150 feet of utility trenching as well inside the project site. The project will result in the disturbance of approximately 550 square feet of a 10,000 square foot fenced enclosed parcel. The proposed project is located on the west side of Soda Lake Road, approximately 2.7 miles south of Carissa Highway, also known as Highway 58. The project is located in the residential suburban land use category. And it's located in the Shannon Carrizo planning area. Here we have the aerial photo of the site. And another photo, but zoomed in. And so the proposed fake windmill would be right here in this lower southern corner of this enclosed parcel. This is an existing, I believe it's an existing AT&T switching station. Here we have the site plan and the utility trenching will come right here off this pole and down this way to the site. Here's the antenna and equipment plan, the four equipment cabinets, the faux windmill, and the antennas. All right, the northeast and northwest elevations southeast and southwest elevations. And we have some photo simulations. And view one, looking northwest at the site. Here's the existing and the proposed fake windmill. And this is a bolt. So with that, staff is recommending approval of conditional use permit DRC 2012-00002 based on the changes as read into the record and based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Cody. Any questions from the commission? Mr. Gilholm, do you wish to address the commission on this item?
Good morning. My name is Jesse Gilholm with Synergy Development Services, representing T-Mobile. Again, I'd like to give thanks to staff and really here to answer any questions of the commission or of the public and get the chance to respond to any such comments. Just long story short, we had a try to come up with the best design for what the terrain offered. It was flat where our coverage objective was without grouping of trees, which would have allowed for the fake tree design. So we came up with the fake windmill design, and I think it's the most appropriate design for the area. Kept it at a minimum height in order to effectively achieve the propagation. I'm here to answer any questions.
I see no questions from the commission.
Okay.
I do have one question for you, though, on the propagation on that. In the staff report, I was surprised that the signal level shown as good on page 2-24 was relatively limited in that California Valley area. You provided this information, I presume. Is that to be expected from this size windmill? Is that why it's limited? I would have thought it would have stretched, your green area would have stretched all the way to Highway 58. Is this, in other words, are you being very conservative here with this?
This is an accurate representation of what's expected. If the facility was higher, the propagation would reach a little further.
Mm-hmm.
But
I was just curious. It seemed like the signals would carry a long way out there, further than indicated on this. But that's what your math tells.
That's what it's a software modulation. They plug in the information and
very good.
Says what it says.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I will open it for public comment. I have no speaker slips on this subject, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board or the commission for discussion. There is no discussion. Mr. Murphy.
Yeah, I guess the only thing on this is the same comment I had in a previous project, that condition of approval 4 requiring the bonding should be at time of issuance of construction permit as opposed to application for construction permit.
So we can
move in 4 to maybe 6 and renumbering them.
Okay, we can move that.
And I was curious on the Kit Fox mitigation. This is inside an existing chain link fence yard.
That's correct.
Does that not mitigate the issue with Kit Fox? Are they capable of even entering that yard?
That's why we foresee no potential impacts to the Kit Fox. We wanted to add some measures to avoid potential impacts in the off chance that perhaps a Kit Fox does enter the yard when the gates open. So we added those as precautionary measures just in case one happened to go into the site and without anyone knowing. And so they're not meant to provide mitigation for identified impacts. We want to ensure the project will not result in the loss of a Kit Fox habitat.
Okay, and then on condition of approval 10, I kind of had the same issue on mitigation compliance coordinator versus condition compliance coordinator.
CCC.
Yeah, CCC.
MCC.
And I do like the CCC because they're responsible for overseeing all the conditions as opposed to there's mitigation. And then the same thing here, the mitigation measures are not identified by their letter numeric code. So that's something I'd just like to see in all future projects if we can. That's it.
Great. Thank you. Well then, Commissioner Campbell, this is in your district.
I have no questions or comments. I will comment, however, that being this is my very first time at this meeting, I did receive these agenda and documents over a week ago, so I have had time to study them and familiarize myself with them.
Very good. Would you like to make a motion?
I would be happy to make a motion.
Five, Holly Phipps, Project Manager.
Thank you. Change of staff for this, huh?
Yeah.
We couldn't call it the Cody Show today.
I wish you could, Mr.
Ms. Phipps, would you proceed, please?
So, good morning. My name is Holly Phipps, Project Manager for this project. So, today we have a request by Wendy Hall and T-Mobile West Corporation to allow the construction of the approximate 1,800 square foot barn for the operation of a wireless facility. The barn would house the antennas and equipment, and this would include 9 panel antennas that would consist of 3 antennas per sector with 3 sectors within the cupola on the proposed 2-story barn. And this would project would also allow equipment cabinets to be installed within the barn and coax cables connecting the antennas to the equipment. The project will result in approximately 4,500 square feet of disturbance within a 5-acre parcel. The proposed project is located on the south side of Highway 41, approximately 3 miles west of the community of Creston. The proposed project is located in the agricultural land use category and is within the El Pomar Estrella planning area. Here we have a look at the site plan, and the project is located on the northern section of the property. And then we have a more detailed site plan. The applicant, even though there's a lot of existing oak trees and foliage within this area, the applicant has also proposed additional trees within this area. I included one elevation because it barn kind of looks like a barn. So this here is the south elevation, and it's kind of hard to see on this, but the antennas would go up here on the cupola. And an aerial image to give you a more realistic view of the property. This was taken looking from turning into the access road from Highway 41, and the proposed site would be located up over this knoll a little bit back behind here, so you can see all the existing vegetation. So we have 2 views, one without the barn up here, and then with a proposed barn that would be earth tones. It's kind of hard to see in that area, especially on this slide here. The actual site where the barn would go. And I, too, would like to make some edits to the staff report to help clean up a few items. On page 3-1, in the subject, project description, at the end, the project is located approximately 3 miles west of the community Creston, not east. Sorry about that. Page 3-5, I would like to delete the wording August 19, 2010, and insert the correct date of November 21st, 2012. On page 3-11, condition 26, I had stated dark green and talking with the applicant. When they submit the proposed color boards, they'd be more applicable to earth tone colors, and so we'd like to insert the word earth tone. And then on
While you're on that COA, that COA is issuance at construction permit, but it ended up in the final building inspection section. Shouldn't that be moved up into the COAs to the prior to issuance of building of construction permit as opposed to the final inspection section?
Oh, yes. I see that. Yes, we can move that, certainly make that flow better.
So where were you suggesting moving it, Mr. Mercer?
We could put that right behind number 17.
Yeah, it'd be the last. It'd be number 18, and then everything else would be renumbered.
Okay, and renumbering will occur as needed. And then after talking with the applicant, our typical stock wording is that condition 34, page 312, I'm sorry, we'd like to delete the second sentence because typically the applicant is responsible for restoring the site back to original. They are having a nice new barn built, and the facility that we want to be removed is the wireless facility itself, not the remuneration of the cell site.
Okay. So the language that you just deleted from number 34, do you not want to have wording in there to requiring the removal of the electrical, you know, the material, the cell instrumentation itself, or is that not necessary?
Erlen Stingwall, planning staff. First of all, the applicant on this project actually negotiated with the landowner so that the landowner would be able to use the barn for storage purposes even while the facility is there. And then as to the question you just asked, the condition will the bonding requirement will still apply to the facility. So that's the antennas, the equipment, okay, and all associated electrical. The applicant just wanted to be sure that it would not be required to remove the entire barn because the landowner actually would want to retain that barn on site.
So it's a real barn.
There was a question there that Commissioner Murphy just asked, which was the barn could be used while the cell site is in operation. I believe Ms. Phipps said no, and you said it could be.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's something the landowner negotiated with the applicant with their lease.
Okay. We'll look to the applicant to discuss that further. County Council.
Thank you. I just have a couple of things. The first is I'd like to recommend some additional changes to the environmental determination finding, A, on page 3-5. So that it would read, the environmental coordinator, after completion of the initial study, found, and the Planning Commission agrees that there is no substantial evidence that the project may have a significant effect on the environment. And then in addition to the change of the date of the negative declaration, I'd also like to add, so it would read, therefore, a mitigated negative declaration has been issued on November 21st, 2012, and is hereby adopted for this project. Just to make it clear that the Planning Commission is actually agreeing with the environmental determination that the environmental coordinator had made earlier. And then the other thing, which I just realized, and I apologize for not catching it earlier, I think oftentimes when an applicant is planting landscaping in order to screen a new facility, we require a landscaping bond, and I just didn't see that in here. I didn't know if that was something that had been considered or addressed at all, and I didn't want to let that go without some consideration.
Mr. Stingwall, before you address that, Ms. McDonald, could you reword repeat your phrase, found and agrees? Is that the wording you want to insert?
Correct, found and the Planning Commission agrees.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Staff, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, Erlen Stingwall, we don't typically require a bond for landscaping for cell site projects. The standard requirement is that the landscaping has to be irrigated and maintained until it's successfully established, and we haven't required bonding for that in the past.
Okay, thank you for addressing that. Mr. Campbell.
Yes, I just wanted to clarify don't live far from this, so I'm real familiar with the property. The aerial map on that large rectangle denoting the property, I don't know if it's property lines or not, shows the site way south, but your view that I just saw on the screen here and your site map, this is actually down by Highway 41. Is that not correct, even in front of the driveway? Because I was equating it where it says site on the aerial view, I was equating it to even with the back of those vineyards that you see there. But apparently it's not. Now that I just realized that, it's down in front by the highway. Is that not correct? Somewhat confusing having the word site clear at the south end of that rectangle.
That's just
that one there. See where the word site is?
Well, it's not. Okay. They have a submitted site plan that shows the exact.
Yeah, I understand that. And when I looked at that, it seemed to be. So it is the where the site plan shows out by the highway.
Yeah.
Not the back side of the
parcel. The whole property is
right.
The site.
Okay. Okay. All right. Just wanted to clarify that.
Commissioner Christensen.
Yeah, I don't know if this has anything to do with the approval of the project, but I am confused about whether this is a barn that's going to be a cell phone site or a cell phone site that's going to be a barn. If it wasn't going to have cell phone stuff in there, would it just would be a barn that a landowner could build and they wouldn't really even need, I mean, you guys wouldn't even get involved because it's a barn, so, yeah.
That's correct.
Okay, so it doesn't really matter. Okay, I just want to make sure. Thanks. It does answer the question about why it's so big, though. That was going to be my next question about why we have such a large cell phone.
Even though because as the decision maker in looking at an environmental document like a negative declaration, the Planning Commission is really the one, you're the body that gets to decide whether or not that's an appropriate level of environmental review. If you disagreed, you know, decided something more was necessary, then you'd be able to disagree with that, find the fact that the negative declaration was issued by the environmental coordinator's office.
Okay. And then on, once again, on bonding condition of approval 6, I'd like to see that move to, I guess, 8 maybe, under prior to issuance of construction permit.
Could we not, do you not just want to leave it there and just change the word application to issuance? Is it a question of moving it?
Well, it's under us, they have these subheadings. So it's under the subheading.
Oh, completed at time of application.
Yeah, so I just
sure.
want to move it down in the conditions of approval to where it's under the subheading of issuance of construction permit.
Right.
So it moved from 6 to, actually, I guess it moved to 6 would become
7 and
8. 7 and 8 would stay what it is.
Right.
And 7 would move to 6. You understand what I'm saying?
No.
Okay, I want to move number 6 to where 8 is now. I want to make the requirement that it, instead of saying at time of application, at time of issuance of construction permits, the applicant shall submit a bond. It's the same change we made in the prior 2 projects where the bond for the compliance with the design is required at construction, issue of construction permit, not at time of application.
Okay.
Avoid them having to purchase a bond prior to the permit approval.
Noted.
Got that.
And then I had one other question, maybe. Maybe even for Glenn here, it had to do with sedimentation and erosion control plans. So I've seen that, I think it's a condition of approval before, but there's a statement in the initial study that says it's required at all construction and grading projects, period. So if that's the case, do we ever need it in a condition of approval as a separate item? Because I think it's been in other plans I've seen. Or
sure, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. It is an ordinance requirement, and it is required whenever having earth disturbance. It's like a number of our conditions, which are just kind of notification. It gives people a head up that when they submit their plans that they would be required to have a sedimentation as opposed to a plan check comment. So it kind of expedites the permitting process.
Yeah, and the only reason we didn't lay it out as a condition, but then we identified water and hydrology as being one of the significant or items that needed to be possibly mitigated. So I didn't know if we needed a condition and are specifically setting that out or whether the fact is it's covered by the existing ordinance.
Water and hydrology. Arlen, maybe you can expand on that one.
Well, the initial study did identify a potential water and hydrology impact that would be mitigated by the standard ordinance requirement for an erosion and sedimentation control plan. And as Mr. Marshall stated, we added a mitigation measure to that effect, even though it's required by ordinance, just as notification, just to make sure it's here as part of the record.
So there is a mitigation.
It's not in the conditions.
I believe, Mr. Commissioner Murphy, I believe I did not put that condition in there because it is required by ordinance. So I've cleaned it up by not putting that condition in there. But I also did address in water and hydrology condition number 7, W1, so that they do, for their runoff of their water and stuff, that they do provide low-impact development and, as such, provide rain gardens or forest paving systems. Right. So I did grab that from that section, but I did not add the condition for the drainage plan.
Great, and I appreciate having the reference numbers, letters contained in the COAs.
Perfect. Very good.
All right.
Mr. Gilholm, would you like to address the commission on this one?
Good morning, Jesse Gilholm with Synergy Development Services representing T-Mobile. I would like to go in a little more detail on this project to describe the history, how we came to this design, and why we think it's the best design. The objective for T-Mobile in this particular location was to install a facility which will cover some of Creston. The primary objective was Highway 41 in this particular area, which was a limiting, gave us limiting options due to the topography. There was the Highway 41 is a bit curvy in that area, and there's some knolls. So we were limited to install the facility within a quarter mile strip of Highway 41. Facility is there now. My guess is if an applicant came to install a facility similar to what is there for that AT&T facility, they would not obtain staff support, would be my guess. So we tried to come up with a solution which posed the least visual impact to the area and provided the coverage objective for T-Mobile. We did go across the street to the south side of Highway 41, and we contacted a property owner, two properties to the west of the subject parcel. There's a vineyard there, and after working with the property owner who was on board, we were proposing to install a monocypress, fake cypress tree. We would install several real cypress trees along the end of some of the rows of grapevines. One of them would be fake and would house the antennas. We got quite far down that process, and then upon completing a lease agreement with the property owner, we discovered that there were CCNRs which restricted use on the property and which would have disallowed the use of a wireless telecommunications facility. And those CCNRs were applicable to that subject parcel as well as about a dozen or so other connecting adjoining parcels. So that project proved not viable. An amendment to the CCNRs, I believe, I don't know the date, I'm going to say early 2000s, there was an amendment which allowed for the installation of a wireless telecommunications facility disguised as a fake barn on the subject parcel that we are for this project. So we went to this property owner as really our only resort, as dictated by the CCNRs and the limited topography and T-Mobile's coverage objective. It appears that there was a project. It actually, I'm not sure how far it got. I know there was a staff report which had recommendation for approval. I don't know if it went to hearing, but again, about 10 years ago. And anyways, with that directive, we went, contacted the property owner and worked to come up with a fake barn, or I'm not going to say a fake barn in this case, because it is a barn, wireless telecommunications facility within a barn, and then to try to address what is this? Is it the cell site disguised as a barn, or is it a barn with a cell site? It's both. The intent is the property owner wants a barn on their property and had the intention of at some time constructing one. So they will be utilizing the barn. The only reason they would not utilize it is if the barn's being constructed to accommodate the T-Mobile antennas. It's also being constructed to attempt to accommodate future carriers should they want to install a facility in the area. Each carrier's needs are different, so you can't foresee exactly the need of another carrier and which direction exactly their antennas will look. But nonetheless, this barn was designed to do our best to accommodate future carriers. So the only reason that it wouldn't be used as a barn in the future is if enough carriers, future carriers, co-located their antennas up in the parapet cupola and installed equipment within the footprint of the barn, which would then preclude the space available for the property owner to utilize it, in which case it would be a fantastic representation of co-location. With the footprint that current carriers need for equipment, I doubt it would ever come to a point where property owner could not park one or two vehicles in the barn, even if all the major carriers came on board, because they don't need that big of a footprint. So I hope that helps clarify what is this thing. And to address a little bit the size of it, it's twofold. One, we wanted to be able to accommodate future carriers, to accommodate the uses of the property owner as they intended. And also we're trying to get the antennas high in the air. And if we would to minimize the size of the barn, then it would look more kind of like a steeple or a tower. So in order to get that height, we wanted to be consistent with the general area of what a barn looks like and is designed as. So that's why it's the current size, which is smaller than the project proposed 10 years ago. The barn is relatively the same height, being one of the most important aspects of a cell site, getting the antennas in the air. But the footprint is different. I am aware that there is opposition to this project. We did attend the Creston Advisory Board and presented the project, at which point there was attendance by an adjoining landowner directly to the west, who is in attendance today, so I'll let them speak on their behalf. But we did perform... We did attempt to work with them to come up with a solution, and I would like the opportunity to get into that discussion in more detail after they have a chance to speak. But I am here to answer any questions at this point. I'd like the opportunity to come back.
Any questions from the commission? I do have a question. I did not see a propagation study or report on this property, as you had the previous one on Soda Lake Road.
We do have both propagation maps and a proposed radio frequency emissions study. Which one are you referring to?
Well, I didn't see either in the staff report. Did you?
Yeah, see.
Was it?
We received those reports and looked at those.
I just didn't see it in what I was given, so... I'm just curious, do you have those available to show us on your screen, Ms. Fitz? No other questions from the commission. You can sit down, Mr. Gilholm, and you will have the opportunity to rebut any public comment.
Thank you.
And this is going to take you a couple minutes. We could go to... Without objection, then, I'll open public comment on this. I do have two speaker slips, and I'm going to call Marsden Robertson. He and his wife, Diane Robertson, have both submitted speaker slips. I'm going to let Mr. Marsden speak for his wife as well, with permission of the chair. So, Mr. Marsden, please state your name for the record at the podium, please, and your residence location, if you wish.
Hello, I'm Marsden Robinson, and we own the property directly west of the halls of the proposed site. And reviewing it, it's, do I get 5 minutes or 3 minutes?
Well, it'll show as 3 minutes, and then I will let you run over for an additional time.
It's our position here this morning that the presentation as available online is somewhat misleading and contains errors from approving agencies. There's a misleading and conflicting information in the initial paperwork that's available online, which I'd like to refer to as the new project referral general application form that was filled out by T-Mobile and by the planning staff. I give you a link there to the particular link to the information. There's a missing page in that documentation that makes impossible review and the co-location logic involved by staff. These are briefly summarized as following. Misleading in referring to the project as a two-story building when it's really 35 feet tall puts it more in line with a three-story building. In the initial paperwork that was filed online, there's errors which repeatedly refer to the project as being a 25-foot tall structure. I've cut out on the first page from that, filled out by Holly Phipps and Lynn Team, you can see the mention of a 25-foot structure. On the second page, which I think was filled out by T-Mobile and signed by Mr. Gilholm, again, the mention of a 25-foot barn structure. Going on to approving letters, there's an approving letter from CAL FIRE, San Luis Obispo County, approving the structure as a 25-foot tall structure. There's also a letter from Mark Davis to Holly Phipps, approving a 25-foot tall barn structure. There's a letter from Holly Phipps to Environmental Health, referring to the project as being a 25-foot structure. So we wonder when they said that the coverage would be better suited with the barn as opposed to a fake tree across the street on the where the co-location would be accomplished, whether they were referring to the building being 25 foot tall or 35 foot tall. In the next paragraph on page 2, A shows that there's a section number 1, which is the top part of that bomb screen. It starts off the existing AT&T facility. That's section 1. And then at the end of that paragraph, there starts off with the structure. Reports that we have seen with discussions between Mr. Green, who is the co-owner of the existing wireless facility on the north side of Highway 41 that occurred about a year ago, about putting another monopole fake tree-type situation wireless facility on his property. Those discussions had proceeded far enough along that, Mr. Green had already decided on what kind of structure he would like to have, and he wanted to go with a fake tree. And at that point, he was informed by T-Mobile that the planning department had wanted to go with a barn-like structure. Contrary to staff statement, a monopine or a monocypress fake tree on Green's property would have little, if any, visual impact, as it would be surrounded by hundreds of oak trees on his property. We base this on the fact that the AT&T pole is only briefly visible while traveling eastbound on Highway 41, and the new tree would have to be built further east and closer to the existing oak trees that are on that piece of property. In our discussions with Jesse Gilholm on September 2012, when asked about a mono tree facility versus a 35-foot tall barn 30 by 50 feet tall, he said that he thought T-Mobile would prefer a pole-like facility. Building this wireless facility on the Grange property would have a much smaller footprint, less impact to the environment, to the kit fox habitat, would be more environmentally greener by using less resources, and would have a very small visual impact, if any. Building this facility on the Grange property accomplishes the goals dictated by CEQA better than building on the Halls property. Now, there was mentioned about the barn, and they could build a 35-foot-tall barn on their property, and we grant them that. But in our discussions with the Halls, they said if they were to build a barn, it would not be 35 feet tall. It would be more in line with a two-story building. This issue we have with this is that this barn sits about 120 feet away from our only place on our lot that we can build a house. So we would be looking at a three-story tall building, 35. Be like looking at a movie drive-in theater screen at the back of our back porch, and that's why we're prefer to see some other site.
You wrap it up, sir.
Okay. We have the perception that the Halls, both of whom are county employees, are being given preferential consideration for this project. They get a barn that's built and paid for by T-Mobile that costs them nothing that they get to use. And in conclusion, we'd like to see you, the board, deny this application. Oh, I forgot to mention. There are existing structures on the Halls property which have been built without permits. And I show you pictures of that. And we feel that staff should have discovered those when they were on site, and those should have been a condition of rectifying those situations before going forward with this project.
Thank you for your comments, then, sir.
Okay, thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate it. So I have no other speaker slips for public comment. I'll close public comment, bring it back to the commission, give the applicant an opportunity to rebut or respond.
Thank you, Jesse Gilholm. I'd like to reiterate address a couple of comments made by Marty. Their main concern was the view shed. From their the location that they want to build their house on their property. We did, as stated, this project was brought to the Creston Advisory Committee where they voiced their concerns. We subsequently had a site visit with the Creston Advisory Committee members who decided to attend, as well as neighbors, including Marty and his wife and a couple other neighbors, and tried to come up with alternative designs, offered to shift the location of the design or of the barn to minimize any impacts and to try to fully understand their view shed and what impacts would be obstructed or from the proposal of the barn. The plans that we came up with, which are submitted, are the ones which T-Mobile believes and that T-Mobile, as well as input from other people, is the least intrusive barn proposal. Marty and his wife clearly did not want a barn. They wanted a fake tree. It's my opinion, and I'll let staff speak for themselves if they want to, but replacing the existing AT&T facility would be it would have to be at least 15 feet or taller in height, which would be a substantial visual impact along 41. Again, there's no visual impact from the barn along the public viewing area of Highway 41. Any facility, either replacing the existing AT&T facility, which would require a substantial increase in height, would be very, very, very visible and would be out of character, because you do have oak trees in the area, but they're all about the same height and they're not tall. They're at about 20 feet, if I'm not mistaken. And there's kind of a canopy at that height, so you don't have any context to make a fake tree blend in. T-Mobile did another standalone facility adjacent to the AT&T facility. It would also look, it'd be a significant visual impact. Not only would the tree stick out, but then you'd have a fake tree next to a wood pole facility, which would make both even contrast even more. So it was a clear decision that the least visual impact would be the barn off the public right of way. I do concur that the it was at one point believed that Diana Marty's property was under the CC&Rs because the property owner, I don't know if it was directly prior to them, but at the time of the amendment of the CC&Rs was signed, which allowed for this barn on the subject parcel, the property owner of their parcel had signed it and agreed to it, which they did not need to do because they weren't part of the CC&Rs, but we just figured at one point upon review, since they signed it, they were part of it. But he is correct. They appear to be one of the lone parcels which do not are not restricted by the CC&Rs. The Halls are going to build a barn on their property. And that's their intent. They have equipment. They want to store it. This is an opportunity to incorporate a cell site and a barn. And if this project got denied, the visual impacts for the people in opposition may be even greater, in that now they're going to have a whatever alternative would be, which again I think are extremely inferior and extremely limited. There would be dual impacts if the Halls proceeded with the barn as they proposed. And here to further address any questions anyone may have.
Any other questions of the applicant on this point? Mr. Campbell, did you have one?
Just a comment, if that's
okay.
Included.
Sure.
I guess my comment, I took heed of the fact that anybody can build a barn, as Christensen said, and that's a fact. But I built a barn about 110 feet from my back porch 42 years ago, built the door high enough to accommodate a squeeze load of hay so I could get a truckload in there mechanically. And above that 14 feet, the peak is probably another 8 or 9 feet above that. And that is one heck of a big barn to look at, yet it's less than 25 feet tall. I would not want to live for 42 years with another 10 feet on my barn. That's got to be a terrible view. I'd rather look at a fake tree anyway. Okay. So it's kind of changing my thinking a little bit about this when I really picture, because I live in the environment, of a 35-foot high structure. It would be dominating the territory, believe me.
We did do a mock-up of the height at the location, and it does sit in somewhat of a saddle. It's not going to be predominantly visible from many vantage points. It definitely will be for the neighbors here today. Although their primary view, they do have sweeping views to the west, and they did have views through the saddle to the east, which will be the placement of the barn will affect them. I believe it will impact their skyline where the barn is for a portion of it, but not for the whole thing. It will also be blocked by other trees which are beyond it. And the height and the bulk of the barn is consistent with some of the other barns in San Luis Obispo County and in the area. We do have some photographs of other barns. There's many that are smaller, but it's not out of character with the other barns in the greater area of San Luis Obispo County, of course, and in the area.
Thank you.
Yep.
No further questions for you at this point. Would staff like to comment on public comments on the?
Yeah, Erlen Stingwald.
Robert.
But we do need to point out that as far as the planning process is concerned, we don't have any ordinance standards or general plan policies that protect private view sheds. That's why our analysis of the project has been purely from the visual impacts on Highway 41.
Any other questions from staff, from the commission of staff on this topic? I do have a question on the what is the setback required for this barn from the property line, and do the building do the plans show that it's in compliance with setback requirements?
Yeah, the required setback is 30 feet. The original proposal showed the barn located within 27 feet, but we are requiring the applicant to submit a revised plan showing them outside of the setback at 30 feet.
And were you able to find those propagation maps?
Yes, we can put them.
So this is existing that you're showing?
Yeah, so this shows the existing coverage.
Is there something that shows the coverage that's provided by the monopole across, or the wooden pole across the street?
We don't have that information. Okay. So here is actually this is existing coverage without the site. So this is the proposed project site right here.
Mm-hmm.
This is the coverage that exists there today. And you can see here would be the coverage from the proposed project.
Thank you. Mr. Murphy, do you have a question about that?
Yeah, I guess the question would be, maybe this is for the applicant or maybe staff, what is the possibility of screening this barn with foliage or trees or whatever to try and decrease the view, and how would that affect the coverage, the cell coverage? If you put trees up on that would partially obscure the view of the barn from the neighbor's house, would that reduce the cell coverage in the area, or is that something that's practical to do?
Well, if the trees grew to a height where they were at the same level as the antennas, I'm sure they could obstruct the coverage. And I'll let the applicant speak to that.
It sounds like a portion of the barn, let's say the top 10 feet maybe is visible from their house, is the impression I'm getting. I don't know if that's accurate or not. So if you put a row of trees that are 10 feet tall along the ridge line to where it at least partially obscures it, does that then defeat the coverage by blocking the antennas in the top of the barn? That's kind of what I'm getting at. If there were trees, yeah, that were spaced with gaps between them.
As long as the trees are not in front of the antennas, which are at the very top of the barn, then it would not interfere with the coverage.
Mr. Gilholm, do you want to address Commissioner Murphy's question?
Yeah, not knowing the topography, I don't know what would be required, the height of the trees and how that would affect the coverage.
Sure. Jesse Gilholm. Erlin's correct. If there was trees adjacent to the barn, which grew in height to be in front of the barn or in front of the antennas, it would cause significant issues with the antennas if there were trees toward the property line. If you ask T-Mobile's radio frequency engineer, do you want trees there or do you want a clear line of sight? They're going to clearly want a clear line of sight. That said, if there were some sporadic trees, it shouldn't greatly, and they were away from the barn, they shouldn't greatly affect the propagation. And I know T-Mobile would be willing, as we offered before, to propose landscaping to try to help mitigate any view issues that they may have. But it is a fine line. You want trees to block the visual impact, but you don't want trees to block the signal. But some could be planted if that be the desire of the commission.
I mean, the trees could be planted on the neighbor's property for that matter. Without knowing the topography, I don't know, but may be possible to position trees that block the view that don't block the antennas. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Correct, and it definitely could be done on the neighbor's property. Unfortunately, T-Mobile can't agree to do any work on the neighbor's property, even if they were willing at this time. If the neighbors were due to, this particular one would be greatly significant.
But if you have
it would require approximately a 20-foot height increase from the existing facility due to the equipment that AT&T currently has on site and the applicable required distance between the antennas, so there won't be interference. So are you familiar with the existing height, 40 feet maybe? I'm trying to find it here, the AT&T.
I'm not sure of the existing height. That tower is right within the – it's very close to the road right-of-way and right within the direct line of sight as you're driving on Highway 41. The other thing is T-Mobile could – if they were able – see, when they were able to get a lease with the property owner, they, you know, they could construct a, say, a monopine or some type of fake tree on the property. However, it's really difficult to get the existing carriers to go from their pole onto a new tower. So that's another obstacle we face with that type of redesign.
Are you...
That's fine.
Mr. Tompey, you're next.
So it seems the choice here is between extending the height of the pole across the street on the north side where it has much greater visibility to traffic on Highway 41 versus putting this barn. It's actually up above the cut bank, I believe.
There is no choice. We aren't choosing
their choice.
The other place.
Their choice.
Yeah.
Our choice. T-Mobile.
Yes or no.
Yeah, and so I'm trying to narrow in on this. And which is just basically, would it be possible to rotate this 90 degrees? Would that make a difference? That might make a difference visually to the neighbor. And I'm wondering what difference that would make to the engineering of the signals.
So, you're talking about instead of having the barn being broadside to the property or parallel with the property line, having it being perpendicular.
Yeah, run it east-west.
Okay.
Instead of north-south, and that that would create more of an angular view rather than a direct.
Mr. Gilholm, could you address that question?
I can say some things about it. Topographically, that would require significantly more grading for one. As far as the future co-location, that would likely disallow for future carriers to co-locate, at least with their antennas at the same height, due to the likely azimuth or direction that their antennas would want to face. The barn is currently situated would allow for future carriers to place the antennas in what would be the log. As I stated before, you can't 100% know what a future carrier's coverage objectives would be, although you can do a best guess, which we've done, and I think it's pretty clear they'd probably go up and down Highway 41. The barn was parallel, if you will, to Highway 41. T-Mobile's antennas would be at each end of the barn shooting down Highway 41, which would not allow sufficient horizontal separation between T-Mobile and future carriers to put antennas to look in that direction, which would be the likely attempt for a future carrier to co-locate. And I also definitely would not speak on behalf of the property owner if they would allow such a shift. But
sure. Mr. Topping, any other questions of the applicant?
No, I think what you said was that it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
It's not impossible, but it would basically preclude future carriers from co-locating.
Yeah, because the outlines of the antennas, as shown on the drawing, on the site plan drawing, actually, you'd just be if you tried this repositioning, you'd only be moving them about 30 feet, one direction or another, one at a diagonal and the other to the north and the other to the east. So you're saying that that wouldn't even work. It's the co-location, and that wouldn't work.
Could I possibly draw on a paper for you real quick and make sure we're talking about the same?
Well, I don't want to take everybody's time if I'm going down.
I believe I do understand it, and yes, without a large face facing east-west, you don't have the room for future carriers to install antennas. In regard to T-Mobile, I'm not even positive that they would accept it. It's not a huge shift, but the topography is varying there.
Thank you.
I don't even know if they would accept
Mr.
it.
Mr. Campbell, you have a question.
Yes, and I
respond to that comment. The Planning Commission's job is to pay attention to what our ordinances say, and what our ordinances say is that it's important what people driving by and the public see from the roadways. So that's why we're paying attention to it. What I was interested in is what you said about where the actual barn is. It's not necessarily the same view as you're getting from your house to your barn. This is a different piece of property and a different house and a different barn. And my understanding from the description that the applicant talked about was that this barn actually sits in somewhat of a saddle, so you're not having a property owner looking straight up or across at a barn that literally will be 35 feet up in the air. It will not appear that way. And the reason I'm focusing more on that is because not only did the applicant say that, but two members of the Creston Advisory Body said that. And those folks tend to be pretty good about protection of the types of concerns you've expressed. So I'm still leaning towards supporting this application if anybody wants to get around to a vote at some point. That's kind of where I am. And that's taken from the advisory body recommendation.
I'm really just wanting to see if anybody has further questions of the applicant on this particular topic. Mr. Murphy here.
No,
Mr. Topping of the applicant.
Not of the applicant.
I do have a question, which was, in your exploration of different sites, you did indeed have conversations with the property owner on the north side that has the existing site. Did you get so far as to doing a propagation study there or reviewing the propagation maps of the existing pole? In other words, was there any difference? Significant difference in propagation between the north side and the south side of the road?
We did not run propagation maps. We had our radio frequency engineers in the field to give a preliminary analysis, and what they stated is we would need to be as tall or taller than the existing pole in order to effectively get any propagation back toward Creston.
Thank you. That answers my question, and nobody else has a question for the applicant. I'm going to bring it back to the commission again. The commission have any questions of staff? Mr. Murphy, your light is on.
I don't know if it's necessarily a staff question. I want to follow up on Mr. Campbell's comment and Commissioner Christensen's comment on the aesthetics, which I found interesting when I got in Planning Commission. They do worry about under CEQA the view from the street, but not the view from the neighbor, which I thought rather different. But then looking at, say, my own personal situation, my own property, if I want to build a structure on my property, that in theory is my right to build it, and the neighbor may not want to look at what I build, but if I have the right to build it, then that's my right. And this property, 5 acres, I suspect could get a probably building permit only to go up to 35 feet for a barn. I don't know if there'd be any other requirement. If it was 20 feet, they could build the barn without a permit probably. So I think we're really going back to what something else Commissioner Christen brought up. Our decision on this project today really goes back to me to the co-location issue. Does it meet the ordinance requirement in regards to co-location or not? And that's been discussed at great lengths, and based on what the applicant and staff are saying at this point, that it does, that the other sites available for various reasons are less desirable than this site. So at this point, I'd be in support of the project.
Thank you. Commissioner Topping, you have a question?
Yeah, just a quick question for staff. Mr. Robertson's page 5 visual identifies a yellow dot as the only acceptable building site for a residence on Robertson's property or parcel. And I'm just wondering, that's a 5-acre parcel. Wouldn't there be other places that a house could be sited?
Just looking at this exhibit, I can assume that perhaps there's an ag buffer or some type of building envelope established on the property, but that's something that Mr. Robertson or the applicant might be able to respond to better than me.
Thanks.
I'm closed public comment on that. Mr. Singwall, I do have a question about Mr. Robertson brought up about this non-code compliant storage building. Is there any discussion about that? within the planning department. Is that an issue at all in this regard?
We're not familiar with that issue, actually. This is the first we've heard of it.
Okay.
We would have to research the permit history on it.
The other question I had was, had you received any comments from the Robertsons prior to this morning's hearing?
Yeah, we have been in communication with the Robertsons.
I'd like to have seen these issues brought up in the staff report instead of hearing it today. I think a site visit, at least for me personally, a site visit might have been important.
It was included in the Creston Advisory Committee did address that issue.
Right. And wish to comment on that? Any objection, Ms. Christensen, Mr. Murphy?
Yes. We haven't done that in other. I don't want to continually add stock conditions that are part of our ordinances to every commission of approval because they get longer and longer and longer already. Yeah. So I don't see
if it's already
COAs
there,
that are part of an
it'll
ordinance.
Be something we will check into.
And the same is true also of setback requirements.
Absolutely, yeah. That's all confirmed at the time.
Yeah. We can't.
We don't need to. No, I agree.
They're already lengthy.
Thank you for that suggestion, Ms. Griffin. Back to you, Mr. Campbell, if you wish to make a motion or not.
Yes, given consideration of your initiating me here with some facts that I'll learn in time, and also it would mean a lot to me that the Creston Advisory Committee has kind of been in on this and passed it, I will move to adopt the mitigated negative declaration ED-12-044. Accordance with the provisions of CEQA, Public Resources Code Section 21,000 at CEQA, and 2, approved conditional use permit DRC 2012-00001 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
Second.
As modified.
No.
And we have a second from Mr. Topping. Is there any further discussion on this, Ms. Christian?
No, I just was going to do the as modified.
Okay. The discussion I would have on this topic is just simply to say, yeah, I think Mr. Murphy brought it up also that the if this wasn't an application for a cell site, there's nothing to prohibit the neighbor from building a barn in the same location of the same size. I do wish that there had been a little bit, perhaps a little other discussion about other sites. But I, again, as Ms. Christensen pointed out, the ordinances do require careful consideration of the visual impact from the public. Although I agree with Mr. Murphy, sometimes it seems illogical when you consider the neighbors who are going to be impacted, but we are bound by our ordinances. So with that, I'll call for the vote. Ramona.
Commissioner Campbell?
Aye.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Chairman Irving?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. I did turn my mic off. Thank you very much. Back to the point. They're quick, aren't they? Motion to take all testimony and documents into the record.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Motion passes. Motion to adjourn this meeting until the next meeting on January 24th,
so moved.
2013.
Second. Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to mention that this is not part of the motion, but there is a land use law and planning conference at UCLA extension provided in LA a week from Friday. It's a very good one. I have information on that for anybody who's interested. It's a good way to catch up.
Definitely not part of the motion, but all those in favor.
Looking for an opening here.
say hi. You were looking for an opening. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you all. And we can discuss your meeting here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.